So Maharaj is from Venezuela, Caracas, and he travels around the world and he teaches about bhakti yoga. And so we're very happy to have him here.
Thank you.
He is a disciple of our teacher. You see his picture next to the tree. And he actually is the author of a book called Srila Prabhupada in Venezuela, which is counting when Prabhupada came to South America and went to Venezuela and opened temples there and interactions with him.
You know, that picture, by the way, is in New York, Washington Square Park. I went there a couple of years ago, and it was very nice. I saw many people around the tree, and putting some flowers under the tree. And then, I mean, regular people. Okay, so I guess you must have some questions also, being your first time and everything. So how do you came to know about the temple here? who's the guilty? What's your name?
Arkayali.
All right. Thank you for bringing your friends. And how long you been coming?
About
a year ago.
2 months. Yeah.
How long ago?
Probably 6 months.
6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
All right. I've seen you before, I guess. Last time
yes.
I was here.
I remember you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
In April, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's discuss a little bit of the philosophy. The analogy he was giving is very nice because it's actually ancient analogy. Here is the painting, the horses and the driver and the chariot and everything, see? So there are five horses and they represent the senses. We have five acquiring knowledge senses. Through these senses we acquire information from the external world. With our eyes, we see the colors, the form. With our ears, we hear the sounds. With our nose, we smell the fragrance. Or the bad fragrance, depends. So the air carries the fragrance. We don't have to touch a flower with our nose. If you pass through a garden that has fragrant roses and the wind is blowing, you can smell it. The same way, the mind takes the soul from one body to another at the time of death, like the wind carrying the fragrances. So the mind is like the vehicle transporting the soul from one body to another body. That's called the transmigration of the soul or reincarnation. So this subject is very important to know, to understand, because it's going to happen to every one of us at a certain time in life. So better be prepared to know what's going to happen. No surprises. And then human life is meant to get ready, how to get ready for this experience and how to go to a higher state of consciousness. So this analogy of the chariot, the individual individual, meaning the soul, is the passenger in the car of the material body, and intelligence is the driver. Mind is the driving instrument, and the senses are the horses. Very good analogy. So, in the process of bhakti yoga, or any kind of yoga, the first thing to accomplish is to control the mind. The mind wanders here, there, everywhere. So to focus the mind in one single object is the purpose of yoga. And that single object is the Supreme, God. It's the purpose of meditation. So I can tell you a little bit of my experience in that regard. I used to practice, before coming to Krishna consciousness, Hatha Yoga, exercise yoga. And it was a little helpful, of course, you know. And was nice. But I remember that the teacher would tell us at the end of the exercises, sitting postures, now put your mind in blank. Blank. No thoughts. No, don't think of anything. Just put it zero. And of course that then wasn't possible more than very few minutes. After a while you have to think, oh, I'm going to meet a friend later, or I'm going to go there. So the mind always had to think in something, feeling something, desiring something. So it is artificial just to put the mind in void. It's not possible. In Krishna consciousness, we learn how to focus the mind in something higher. Because there is more information about God. There is more detailed information that God has a spiritual form. Eternal form. It's very beautiful, very youthful, very attractive. And he also has name, qualities, and activities. So these are object of meditation. God's names, form, qualities, and activities. Of course, in the Christian religion, we hear God created the world in 6 days, and rest the seventh. But what was he doing before that? What he did after creating the world? There is not much information. I mean, very little information is there. That's okay, but we want to know more. So I guess all of you, you know, all of us are coming from a Christian background. That's why I'm mentioning this. That since God is one, God is not Hindu or Muslim or Christian or Jew, because before any religion was there on this planet, God was already there. So he can't be any of this. So Krishna is not an Hindu God. It's like the sun. Sun rises from the east. That there is no Eastern sun or Western sun, Russian or American or Mexican sun. No, the sun is the same for everyone. It's universal. In the same way, welcome. Was it raining outside?
Yes.
A little bit. I see you a little wet.
Trying to carry pizzas
everywhere. Yeah. We shouldn't forget umbrellas from now on. Anyway, so in the same way, you know, this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is very ancient. It's like 5,000 years old. Was spoken by Lord Krishna. So it's a spiritual science. It's not a religion or a belief. Because religion without philosophy, most of the time is sentimental. Well, you believe, I believe. But what is the value of our belief if we don't really know for sure what is what? I mean, who I am? What am I doing in this world? Why am I suffering? What is there after death? Who is God? How he looks like? What he likes? What he dislikes? Where he lives? Does he have friends? So it's interesting. I mean, all the subjects are there. And you will be amazed to know so much information, detailed information about, you know, the spiritual world, the loving relationship that Krishna has with his devotees there. There are basically four loving relationships, eternal relationship every soul has with Krishna. As having Krishna as the master, one as a servant, the other as a friend, other as a family member, other one as having Krishna as husband or lover. So this relationship exists there eternally, and they last forever, and are full of bliss, all expanding bliss, always blissful, and the happiness increase all the time, forever. It's not diminishing. Here in this world, you start something, you get excited about it for some time, then you lose interest, then try to look for something different, something new. Isn't either the fashion or song or whatever, or relationship. But in the spiritual life is a completely different experience. I've been practicing Bhakti Yoga for 40 years now, and it's always very fresh experience every day, because it's something that's developing in the consciousness, that one starts to see things in a different way, perceive things in a different way, and one starts to get realization. The process work is like somebody is hungry and start to eat. So while eating, the hunger diminish and one get nutrition, one get strength. In the same way, by practicing this Bhakti Yoga process, which is start by hearing, chanting, remembering, you know, about Krishna, then one start to feel the hunger start for the material things start to diminish, and one feels spiritual satisfaction. Once when I met my spiritual master in Venezuela, South America, and I heard all his lectures, conversations there during 1 week. So I remember one man asked him, Master, all religions, they say they have the real light. How to know which one is the real? And he said, if you enter a room and the light is on, you don't ask, what is the light? You are seeing the light, you don't need to ask. In the same way, the process is to experience. We have the theoretical knowledge, of course, in this book, Bhagavad Gita. But we also have the practice. The practice is called Bhakti Yoga. And the result is the experience, the change in consciousness. See here this verse, for example. We are talking about the mind. I just opened the page, came out this verse says, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Purpose. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but the self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind, and therefore the senses as well, is called Goswami. Just see, we're talking about it. It's amazing. I didn't look for this word, just happened to pop up. Anyway. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godasa, or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses called Krishna consciousness. That's the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. So go means the senses, and das means servant. So everybody is serving the senses. Whatever the senses demand, one tries to satisfy the demand of the senses. So one who can learn how to control the senses and not be dragged by them is called Goswami. Swami means master of a senses, which are go. That's another meaning of the word Goswami. Yes.
Regarding controlling the senses,
yes.
Does that mean not letting the senses perceive certain things?
No. We don't deny the senses or their engagement. We just learn how to dovetail the activities of the senses into something more satisfying, more spiritual. See? It's not that difficult. For example, the ears like to hear nice music. So we use spiritual music. We like to eat nice food. So we eat vegetarian food offered to Krishna, to God, and becomes a spiritual food. See? So we dovetail the activities of the senses in such a way that it's not something like you are repressing the senses, but rather giving them a better engagement, something give you higher taste. Yes?
When you offer the food to Krishna and then you consume it, like, how do you offer it to Krishna?
There are prayers to through which we put the food in front of a picture of Krishna and we ask him humbly to please accept the food. There are some prayers to recite in the Sanskrit language. But even if you don't know, just chant Hare Krishna. You put your vegetarian food. And once a reporter asked our Guru, Prabhupada, are you vegetarian? He said, no, we are Krishnatarian. Whatever Krishna eat, we eat. And since Krishna is non-violent, he doesn't like to harm the animals. So we also follow his example. In his childhood, Krishna was a coward boy. He would take care of the cows. That was his pastime. Pet. He had animals were, the cows were his pet animals. Of course, he lived in a village, so everything was green and nice and beautiful. So by offering the food, we're acknowledging that everything belongs to him for his pleasure. That then when after he enjoyed, then we enjoy what he already enjoyed. We're accepting our subordinate position. I will give you one example, one analogy from the Vedas. That once the senses had a meeting to discuss about the stomach. The senses were discussing, this stomach is eating all the time, we have to serve him all the time, and he's doing nothing, and we have to do all the hard work to bring the food and all this. So he's a tyrant, he's exploiting us. Let us go on strike. No more feeding the stomach. So for 3 days they didn't feed the stomach, and they were feeling very weak. So they had another meeting. Why were feeling so weak and without any energy to do anything? Oh, since we went on strike on the stomach, that's happening to us. So let us break the strike, see what happened. As soon as they started feeling the stomach again, they start to regain their energy and strength. Oh, no more strikes. So in the same way, God, Krishna is like the stomach and we are like the senses, we are the part. So unless we are serving the center, pleasing the center, we can't be satisfied. That's the meaning of the analogy. Yeah.
The sense of ownership, that's also something that we like to satisfy. Can that be satisfied through serving Krishna?
Yeah, the sense of ownership everybody has. But the truth is, everything we have doesn't belong really to us. Because when we die, we can't take anything with us. So how is that we are owning anything? It's just being borrowed by us. I mean,
but it is inherent to a human being.
Yeah, it's natural. We get attachment to to things, to property, my car, my bank balance, you know, my friends, my house, my this, my that. But the truth is, everything is temporary in this world. Nothing lasts forever. We come to this world empty-handed, we live empty-handed. But while we are here, we claim so much false ownership over so many things. So that's due to a false ego or false identity. Because we are not the body, we are not the mind, we are spirit souls. So once we understand the actual proprietor is God, then we don't claim false proprietorship over anything. We know it is under my care. I should take care of things. But the real proprietor is God, Krishna.
Is that satisfying to that desire to feel ownership? You were speaking earlier about dovetailing. How does one dovetail?
Yeah. Oh, okay, you can say my Krishna. Krishna is mine. Krishna is mine. Okay. In that way. I'll tell you one real story. Once Prabhupada was walking in he was used to go morning walk every day. He went to Juhu Beach in Bombay. So the devotee invited one very rich man. So Prabhupada talked to him, "What do you do for a living?" The man said, "Okay, I manufacture glass, butter glass for all India. I have factories everywhere. It was a multi-million, you know, dollar business." So and Prabhupada asked him, "And what is the main ingredients to make glass?" And he said, "Oh, that's sand." "And to who belongs the sand?" And the man said, "Oh, the sand belongs to Bhagavan, to God. Oh, so you're stealing from Bhagavan." The man said, no. "Swamiji, I also give donation to the temple." "All right then, you're a small thief then." So the man laughed. "Yeah, it's true." The fact is, everything belongs to God. And due to false ideas that we are the owners, we fight each other, you know, for centuries over a piece of land because we think we are the owners. That's why there's so many wars and so many violence and so many madness in the world, because lack of God consciousness, too much greed. People have to learn to be satisfied with the basic needs of life. Lead a peaceful life. So due to lack of this consciousness, there are so many disturbances in the world. So much greed, violence, envy, hatred. But if one learns the science how to love God, Krishna, one can love all His creation. One can see everything related to Him. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna say, "I am the tasted water. The sun and moon are my eyes." So every day we have to drink water, we have to see the sun. Of course, but not on cloudy days. The sun is there even in cloudy days. But you have to go above the clouds to see the sun. You can take an airplane. In the same way, God is always there. Due to physical consciousness, we can't see it. So we have to go beyond the clouds of ignorance covering our consciousness in order to see what is beyond. So we shall think, yes, these are given to me by God to take care of them. I should give them proper use. If you have a knife, you can use it to attack somebody with it, or you can use it to cut an apple and offer it to Krishna, give it to everyone, share it with everyone. So things in themselves are not good or bad, but the use you give them is good, can be good or bad. And how you use things depends on your state of mind, your state of consciousness. So Krishna consciousness means to try to raise above ignorance and passion, try to come to the stage of goodness, in which one can see reality, spiritual reality, true, beyond illusion.
We have stories of some demons being devotees, Rikshasana and such. They were doing bad things, but they were still considered devotees.
Who?
Rikshasana.
Who's that? The Rastra wasn't a demon.
He was born, he's a Rakshas, right?
The king who was born blind.
Rikshasana, the one who was... Someone cursed Indra to kill... There's a whole story in Bhagavad. I can't remember.
Say the name again.
Rikshasana.
Brikasura. No, actually he was devotee. It happened that he got a demon body, but his consciousness wasn't as a demon, was rather as a spiritualist. He was very advanced in Krishna consciousness. Although he got the birth as a demon, but he wasn't a demon actually. So external things can sometimes mislead us. We should not believe in what we can see with our eyes, but we shall see beyond that. It's like in a very hot day, you're driving your car and you may see a mirage of water on the highway, but you know it is not real. It's just a mirage. There is no water on the road, so you can't believe everything you see with your eyes. And there are things you can see with your eyes, and they are real. Like the radio and TV transmission is going on in the air. You can see it, but it's real. So, materialistic society have taught us that you only believe in what you touch and see, and you don't believe in things you can't see. But that's wrong. You can see the soul with these eyes. But we know the soul is there. How we know the soul is there? It's not by blind faith. It's by philosophy. What is this? How do you know when you approach fire that with closed eyes that this is fire? Because there is heat and light. You feel the heat. So, in the same way, the symptoms of the soul is consciousness. What is proof the soul is in the body? Because you are thinking, you are feeling, you are willing. So that's consciousness. So consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Once the soul leaves the body, the body is useless. It's not alive anymore. But when the body dies, the soul doesn't die. The soul is eternal. So the soul goes from one body to another body, like changing dress. But the purpose of human life is to stop this repeated reincarnation and to get to our original place in the spiritual world. No more birth, death, old age, disease. These are the real problems of human life. So, human life is meant for self-realization, not sense gratification. I mean, as a goal. We accept what the body needs. Everybody knows we need to eat, to sleep. Okay, and to shelter the body, basic needs, to have a family, to have, that's natural. But the goal of life should be established as the transcendence, to go beyond the limitation of the mind and the senses, to understand the absolute truth. Anybody else have a yes?
It's my understanding that building karma continues to make it that you reincarnate.
Yeah.
When you have a self-realization that in the past you've made sowed negative karmic seeds,
yes,
into your past, is there a way to possibly not eliminate the karma but maybe counteract it with a more positive act?
Yeah. Karma is a law. It's a physic law. Action, reaction. Cause and effect. So every action has a reaction. Either good or bad, depend on your action. So the way to overcome this bad reaction, first of all, stopping that. If you're doing something harmful to yourself, then don't do it anymore. And it's like a fan. If somebody starts the fan right now, it doesn't stop immediately. It still goes around for a few times before it stops. So in the same way, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, the karma doesn't stop immediately altogether. It takes a little more time. But if you make the resolution not to again do bad karma, then in the practice of Krishna consciousness, you will get completely free from it. In this same life, it is possible. Okay, I will tell you one story about how karma works. It's a real life story. It happened beginning of the 20th century. One man from Spain immigrated to South America to make money. So he started the business of selling milk. So he had a few cows and milking them, selling the milk. But in order to make money faster, he started to add water to the milk. First 5%, then 10%, 15%. So, if the government caught him doing that, he will go to jail and to pay, fine and everything. But he took the risk to make money fast. His name was Pedro. So after a few years, he made a huge amount of money because he increased his business all over the country. So he decided after 10 years or so to go back to his country in Spain, Canary Island, to enjoy life. He became a very rich man. So he went by boat, first class cabin, and all his money was in a big chest full of gold coins. At that time, that was the currency, gold coins. Now they are in the museum. In my childhood, I used to use silver coins like currency. Then the government withdrew all the silver coins because they were more valuable than the currency itself. People were melting it and selling it as silver in the market. So the government withdrew all the silver from the market. So anyway, this man was traveling, was making so many plans. I will make a building. I will buy the best car. I will get the most beautiful girlfriend. He was making so many plans, But in the middle of the trip, there was a huge storm, so bad that it looks like the boat was going to sink in the ocean. So the captain was asking the sailors to throw in the ocean all heavy things. So they were going to each cabin looking for heavy things to throw in the water. So they came to this man, Pedro's cabin. Oh, this chest is very heavy. We're going to throw it. No, I'll give you money. This is my ring. No. What is the use of money if you're going to die? And they throw the chest in the water. So there's been almost jumped behind it, crying, lamenting, my money, my riches, my gold. And after some time, he calmed down and he spoke to his money. He said, with water I made you and water you left me. Understand the idea that he made his money adding water to it. And the money was lost in water. So that's how the law of karma works. And this is a real story. It happened, actually, some 100 years ago. So this is how the law of karma works. Action, reaction. You know the saying, what goes around comes around. So it's like a boomerang. Whatever you do will come back to you. So sometimes, why this happened to me? I'm such a good person. Why this bad things happened to me? Nothing happened by accident. We may forget what we have done in the past, either this life or a previous life. But if you practice the process of yoga, bhakti yoga, and you stop doing these bad things, then in the course of time, they will be completely eradicated. It is possible. So that's very important. Now I'll tell you another story about how to prepare for that. About reincarnation, about the purpose of human life. You know, we hear the saying, you know, eat to live, not live to eat. Is it? The same way, we should not live to die, rather die to live. What means die to live? I will explain it with this story. One Indian man went to Africa to do business. And after he finished business, he went to some nice park, you know. And while he was walking in the park, admiring the beauty of the nature, he saw a big tree with many parrots on its branches. So he stopped admiring the beauty of the parrots, colorful parrots, you know, have varieties of colors, and big parrots. How they call them? The big colorful parrots?
Toucans?
Huh?
Toucans?
Toucans, yeah. Huh? No, not toucans. Toucans have a big... No, not, that's not parrot. Parrot is...
In the car?
Huh? The big ones with the different colors and their wings, and, you know, beautiful. Kind of parrots. Yeah, red and orange. Yeah, right. So he stopped admiring the beauty of those parrots. Oh, I haven't seen in India such colorful parrots like this. So it would be nice if I can caught one of them and take home. So he went behind the tree and jumped on one of the parrots and grabbed it, and all the other parrots flew away. So he took this parrot home and put it in a nice big cage and was feeding the parrot with nice fruits and nuts and honey. So his friends would come visit. Oh, such a beautiful parrot. What do you got? Oh, I brought it from Africa. Oh, very nice. So he started to teach the parrot Hindi words. And of course, parrots, they learn very fast. I mean, recently I read in the news that one African parrot amazes science because this parrot knows by heart 100 words. But not only that, he can make his own phrases out of them. Nobody has taught him that. He just do it. For example, if you see you eating mango, you say, oh, so tasty, give me a little. So that's a real parrot. It happened. So anyway, the parrot of our story, he also learned many phrases and words like that. So like after a year, this businessman asked the parrot, "My dear parrot, I'm going back to Africa to do business, and I'm planning to go to the park where I caught you. If I see your friends, do you have any message for them?" There was, "Yes, please, if you see my friend, tell them I miss them very much. I remember them with much love. But I'm happy in this cage since you are giving me nice foods and nuts. But tell them I miss them." "Okay, sure, I will tell them." So the man did his business, went to the park and stood in front of that. Yeah, and all the same parrots were there. So he gave the message. When he finished the message, one of the parrots dropped dead. So the man was shocked. "Wow, poor parrot, he has to die like this, you know. That's very weird, very strange. Anyway, life sometimes is mysterious. I don't understand. As soon as I finished giving the message, he dropped dead. Maybe they were soulmates. So there's two parrots, who knows?" Anyway, so he went back to his home. And after thinking about it for a while, he decided to give, you know, the bad news to his parents. So he told, "My dear parrot, I'm sorry to tell you that yes, I saw your friends, I gave the message, but as soon as I gave the message, one of your friends dropped dead. And to his great amazement, his own parrot dropped dead in the cage too." The man was completely shocked. "You know, my poor parrot, I loved him so much. How he could die like this? It's not possible." He was crying, right? "I can't believe it. Why these strange things happen?" So anyway, he said, "What can be done? Life is mysterious sometimes." So he opened the cage, took out the dead body, parrot, went to his courtyard, put the parrot on the grass, and turned to look for some tools to make a grave for his parrot. And as soon as he turned his back, the parrot flew away and it stood on a tree. "Oh, it wasn't dead. You cheated me. Why you did it?" And the parrot said, "Well, I did it because my friend from Africa sent me a very important message." "And what was that message?" "The message was, die to live. Play the dead." That means the other parrot in Africa didn't die either. He played the dead to send the message. He's like the guru. So, what's the meaning? The meaning is the parrot can be happy in a cage. Doesn't matter how nice fruits he may get. It's not happy. He has need to be free. Fly on, you know, different trees, make friends, have nests. In the same way, the soul is like the bird and the encaged in the body. And the soul to be happy needs to be free from birth and death, old age and disease. So, die to live means die for material life to live for the spiritual life, for Krishna. Die to live. Because everybody has to die anyway. Is it? So better get ready, die for something really valuable. Something really worthy to die for. And doesn't mean die to live also means that if some temptation comes, you know, you're trying to focus on a spiritual life and you just play the dead, you know. like not much interested on those things again. Like, you know, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, some impediments and challenges may happen to you. Because being in ignorance and illusion for such a long time, in so many lives, and now in this life try to awaken spiritually, try to, you know, overcome the ignorance of illusion and attachments, come to the spiritual level of life. Of course, is a great challenge, but is a wonderful experience. I mean, it's worthy the effort, at least to try it. Nothing to lose, all to gain. I started my spiritual search when I was 14. Because I start to question everything, you know. I mean, why people work so hard to get money, you know. And, okay, they get married, they have children, they got old, they die. And then what? I mean, must be something more than that. I have to find what it is. I'm not satisfied with this material life. It must be something more than this. So I start to search for answers. You know, try to find the truth. And in that search I came to know Bhagavad Gita, Krishna consciousness, and I got all the answers I needed. Very satisfying answers. So human life is meant to question, to ask questions. Why am I suffering? What is the purpose of life? What is there after death? What's going to happen? How can I get ready for it? So these are very important. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this knowledge, this Krishna consciousness philosophy with you. And to practice this bhakti yoga, you don't need to change your religion or anything like that. It's just change of consciousness. It's not a religion. Religion is something you can change. For example, somebody can change his religion from Buddhist to Christian, Christian to Muslim, Muslim to Jew, whatever. But you can't change what you are, you always are. It's like fire. You can't take away from fire heat and light, because it's the nature of fire. You can't take away from water being liquid. Of course, you can put it in the fridge, becomes ice, but it's not the natural condition of water. The natural condition of water is liquid. So the same way, artificially, we're trying to be something we are not. And that's like the frozen water. So we have to approach the heat of Krishna consciousness so we can go to our original state, happy state, flowing with the current of love of Godhead. That's Krishna consciousness. And it's very easy to achieve. This chanting of Hare Krishna is very powerful because it can raise the consciousness to a higher level. Just the chanting can do this transformation. And not simply, and blissfully. It's a nice experience. You should try it sometime. I know some of you are already doing it, so I encourage you to keep doing it. And you will see wonderful result on the path. So any of our new guests have any other comment or question? Yes.
My name is Raj. I'm from Minneapolis. I heard that you are doing this kosher, so I didn't want to miss it.
Oh, thank you for coming. From Minneapolis?
Yes.
You just arrived?
I'm visiting my daughter here.
Okay. Okay, welcome.
We have been involved in this Bhagavad Gita for the last 4 years in Minneapolis with the selected friends.
Very good.
We went to 100 people from several countries. We volunteered and we went there and we distributed over 150,000 Bhagavad Gita in a local language in southern part of India.
Ah, very nice.
On the Neha Desi Day last year in December.
Very good.
So all the devotees who come, we
No, now they are putting this on motels here all over in the U.S.
Yes.
It's all over the news. I saw it in the news, actually. As they have Bibles, they also have now Bhagavad Gita. The Bible of India, too, is there. And this is amazing. You have to read this. So much knowledge is there. All right. Yeah, let's chant up. Yeah, let's chant.